Welcome to Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all of the time. Join me, your host Sam Wiles, as we discover the history, the music, and the man behind it all, Paul McCartney. To get in contact with the show, email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Greetings, hello, welcome to all, once again, to another bonus episode of Paul or Nothing. Bonus, of course, having the Latin meaning of something to keep both me and you busy between official episodes. It's the first day I've had off in a while. I'll also be recording our long overdue Wings Over America episode, but I don't have enough time to explain why I've taken so long to get these episodes out, so let's just crack on, shall we? Now, I want to start the episode, as I try to do oh so often these days, by thanking you, the listener, the downloader, you, the emailer, you, the Twitter follower, you, the Patreon supporter, for helping us make the show what it is. We're well past the 5,500 download mark now, which is a drop in the ocean compared to oh so many podcasts out there. You know, some get hundreds of thousands per episode, but hey, it's a start, and we have a long and winding road to go. Hope you packed your bags, as we have some fantastic episodes ahead. Contact the show via email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Tell me your Paul McCartney stories. Talk to me about the album reviews that I've gone through. Maybe I've got things right, got things wrong. Maybe you want to warn me or advise me about an album in the future. Maybe you've even met the man himself. Let me know at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at McCartneyPod. Join the Patreon, which is patreon.com/McCartneyPod. Type in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Podcast into YouTube or Facebook. Find us there. And please, as always, leave us an iTunes review. Also, there is the blog. This episode today that we're talking about today was originally a blog post. So if you want to get some of this content a little bit early, possibly try checking out the blog. A lot of the topics and elements that I talk about in these bonus episodes were ones that I couldn't fit into a normal episode. I spend so long writing these things. I spend far too long writing these episodes, and sometimes when I get a bit bored talking about famous groupies, I will go off and write something else that's still Paul-centred, so I still feel like I'm kind of working. And this is one of them. I essentially wanted to go back and do something that I said I would do on our fourth episode of the podcast, where I talked about the intended original release for Wings' second album, Red Rose Speedway. And ever since I learnt about the certain revelations that came out during that episode about the recording of this album, I was eager to go back in time to redress the balance of history and return the album to a place whereby it is no longer the butt of every Wings fan's joke. Look, it's not a bad album, but just like Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino, what Red Rose needed was a solid editor to rein it all in. Red Rose Speedway was released in 1973 to what can only be described as a turgidly tepid reception by both rock critics and fans alike, and has largely, even by McCartney fanatics, been relegated to a rating slightly higher than forgettable. Now, whilst this album has its detractors and defenders, me being in both camps, the real tragedy behind this album's release is that we only got half of the content upon release. Originally, this was a double album, a band album, a semi-live album, the early Wings magnus opus, and the band's great statement to the world that they were not to be messed with live on stage. But due to reasons not fully disclosed, the record label, or Paul, decided that it was time to go all George Martin with the White Album on Red Rose Speedway and condense it down to a single, cheaper and more marketable product. It's like Capitol Records was giving us half a PlayStation 4 game on release, but then refusing to give us the DLC. No remaster, no season pass, no re-release, no ultimate edition. Bugger fuck all. But what if it didn't go down that way? What if the band didn't back down? What if they had said sod it and decided to release their deluge of content all at once and to hell with the consequences? Well, that's what we're here to find out today, folks. So here I am now, trying to right the wrongs that took place over 40 years ago today and have very, very few consequences in that kind of butterfly effect way. Let's see if I can't make something a little bit better, a little more cohesive, to take the sting out of the calamity that was, is, and will forever will be Red Rose Speedway. The goal on this episode, folks, is to take all the existing songs that we know McCartney and the gang were working on during the recording sessions for this album. I will be taking all released and unreleased tracks, assessing them on their own merits, and out of that, build a brand new Red Rose Speedway with a brand new disc and a brand new track listing. But what do I want to change here today? Well, one of my immediate moves is to reverse one of the big missteps of the single disc, which was the display of an apparent lack of faith in Denny Lane on lead vocals on the album. We've already had the first album, Wildlife's Out. Now, I get that Paul would be singing all the leads on that to sell the album and to kind of usher people into Wings, but come on, we're on the second album now. Give Denny something to do. or any of the band in any capacity to do, really. Along with more band jams and live improvisation, this is less of a McCartney album. This is less Paul McCartney in Wings and more resoundingly Wings. Then there's the overall sound of the album. This Wings double album that I'll be presenting to you will be much more rock orientated, with much more of a focus on the input of the guitarist Henry McCulloch, and will add an edge to the band that would forever elude them. This would be a double album that Henry would have been proud to show his rocker friends, as opposed to his grandmother. Thirdly, as you'll have heard on our Wings at the Speed of Sound and Wings Over America episodes, one of Wings' biggest early career blunders was their complete lack of live presence on vinyl. Like the Beatles before them, they were always better live, and the original double disc had several live tracks that really brought the house down. You can hear roaring crowds and applause abound, which may have gone some way to actually improve their image as a band. You know, as a band that's liked by people. You know, if people can hear people liking Wings, maybe they can like them themselves. But before we begin, I do have to admit that I agree with McCartney in two ways when it comes to dragging up old songs from the bottom of the barrel. Firstly, that some songs should remain forever hidden to some extent to keep the interest alive, and also some songs just aren't that good and deserve to be left on the cutting room floor. The songs that don't make it onto today's episode will be kind of relegated to the same fate as Macca's Carnival of Lights, except without any of the hype or prestige. But without any further ado, let us repair Red Rose Speedway. Obviously, before we start, we actually kind of touched on all of these songs that I'm about to discuss on our fourth episode, like I mentioned, where I talk about the entire history of Red Rose Speedway. And also, more recently, in our second Cold Cuts episode that I'm also recording today, I will also be re-detailing more of the irregular McCartney releases. Side 1. With Side 1, I want to kind of create a smoother transition from McCartney and Wings' smaller, more quaint folk-esque beginnings. This was chosen as it would blend the kind of movements through Ram and Wildlife and kind of build us up to things like Band on the Run, Venus and Mars, that kind of rock staple, and just to kind of make the story make more sense. The greatest and probably most obvious benefit of this decision is that I get to put some of the strongest material at the start of the album, where at the time would have counted most. Wings are trying to course correct here, and I'm trying to help them do it, so let's do it with the best songs. And they're all the songs with the most Ram in them. Ram will forever be my favourite Paul McCartney album, and hey, if I can glean some of the quality and some of the sheer inventiveness from Ram and transfer it over to Red Rose Speedway, I don't think anyone will be worse off by that. I don't think anyone will be made to feel worse off by that decision. This album can use all the quality it can get. In fact, all the songs on this side one have roots in McCartney's psychedelic bucolic classics. This gives the record a strong lead to hook in fans who may have been a little bit unsure and unsteady about the quality band, without bombarding them with such a large commercial detour too soon. Big Barn Bed. So I had to stick somewhat to the McCartney canon when creating this list, and there are some elements of the lore that you have to be faithful to. And the power of Big Barn Bed is undeniable. You shouldn't attempt to fix what isn't broken, and I won't. Paul knew how good this one was, and it's always going to be the opener. It just is. And again, even though the song is only 7% Ram, that 7% gives it some real staying power. And it's always been a crowd pleaser. Although the version on the Pure McCartney compilation, with its louder and densely layered gruff guitar sound, would be used instead, as opposed to the overly acoustic original. I Lie Around. All over the place. I make no secret that I think I Lie Around is the most tragically unremembered song in the entire Wings discography. Denny Lane is here singing lead on the second song, which goes against the whole Wings, Paul McCartney and Wings debacle. The band is clearly being more democratic here, but not to the band's detriment. This is a fucking classic song. Denny gets the helmet and he nails it. It's the album saying, this is Denny and here's this great song to go with him. I'll admit that this is probably a little bit too personal. This probably wouldn't go down this way if I was talking to MPL as an advisor today, but history has to be rewritten to some extent for this double album, one where I Lie Around is a classic and Junior's Farm is the rightly forgotten one. Little Lamb Dragonfly.
I have no answer for you, little lamb. I could help you out, but I cannot help you in.
I felt like we needed at least one somber song on the first side, so fortunately I had this one, as Little Lamb Dragonfly is just such a complete, ready to go knockout package. It really could go anywhere on the album. It's no Dear Friend or anything like that, but its ability to convey genuine emotion and kind of drop you into that world where you feel the raw, wrought pain and anguish that Paul's feeling, as well as the ever more sophisticated layering techniques and production skills and harmonies that the band were experimenting in, was just unparalleled for this period. Get on the Right Thing. Again, like Big Barn Bed, this was never not going to be on side one. This is and always will be one of the standout tracks, will be one of the most defining tracks of the album. And what a way to end the first side, eh? In essence now, this song is a little more rewarding as it comes a song later on the album. For me at least, the fact that this follows the emotionally draining Little Lamb Dragonfly as opposed to the Saccharine My Love means the song can have much more of a jarring juxtaposition and enjoy a much more bombastic and uplifting sensation, and hopefully would allow the track to become more memorable than it ultimately was. Side 2. So, following the Ram detour that was side one, we have a side that can only be described as the kind of side the band were originally trying to go for. It's also over the place, it just about works. And again, there is no true canon Wings sound. I'm doing the bunny quotes with my fingers here. So if cohesion is what you're after, this ain't the band for you, and this ain't the side for you. This side shows the wide range of talents and styles and influences within the band, and they're all ones that they can comfortably operate within, for good or bad. But remember, folks, that was meant to be the point of Red Rose Speed, a very diverse range of songs that could potentially please any crowd. So I like to think that there's something for everyone here. Live and Let Die.
Makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die.
I literally cannot think of a better way to start this side. You all know about this song, so do I even really need to sell it to you? It's a freaking Bond song, probably the best, for that matter, rest in peace Roger Moore. From those first classic piano coders, you know how special this song is going to be. And to kick off side two with a massive sense of scale and power just makes logistical sense. I want to get people moving, I want to make them feel something, get them excited. After this track, there will be no one in 1972 England who wouldn't be pumped for the rest of the album after this track. The inclusion of this song is also a financially motivated one. I know Paul doesn't, or at least didn't back then, like making people pay for the music twice. He liked to make non-album singles and stuff like that. But the idea of not including this track on Red Rose Speedway in the present day, or retroactively, is just utter madness. The song was a phenomenal success and would have lent some credibility to the album in a similar way that Goodnight Tonight should have gone on Back to the Egg, or Mullock and Tyre should have gone on London Town. So I'm here to rectify the first of those mistakes.
Up next we have One More Kiss.
Just before I go, only one more kiss.
Make no mistake, I am not this song's biggest fan at all, but in the same vein as Revolution 9 and Good Night from the Beatles' White Album, I just couldn't resist the stark and jarring juxtaposition between two such different tracks as Live and Let Die and One More Kiss. One is McCartney taking himself very seriously and trying to be a genre-pushing badass, and this, well, is possibly the most twee, sentimental and overly ripe thing on the entire album. In terms of other songs potentially being in its place, it is the lesser of evils that I occasionally feel is not completely without charm, though I am sorely tempted just to get rid of it and put 1882 on as well. 1882 is a recent favourite of mine that I've actually grown to like after having written the original article for this. Perhaps 1882 could work here. It's also another very jarring song from Live and Let Die. Yeah, you know what? Fuck it. Play 1882. Yeah, we're going to have 1882 here instead. We're going to make this different from the blog, folks. Yeah, 1882 is just one of those songs that proves that Paul McCartney can write a deep, dark story and put it into a song. It shows that he's not afraid to be something different and do something different with the band. And it has that great, dirgy, wildlife quality, which I just find so irresistible. Following on, we have Night Out. Now, discounting my random and spontaneous edition of 1882, this is our first/second lost track appearing on side two, and it is really one of the best. It really is. I have no idea why this was left off the original release, to the extent where I consider it to be borderline criminal. The utterly infectious and discordant, almost electro intro that sounds something like a demented Mark Bolan track, and that wicked riff and that surprisingly perky shouty chorus that just electrifies your whole skin. Everything is just perfect in terms of an early Wings release, and it's got so much more energy than anything that would actually end up on the final product. Even though we have only these rough mixes to go by, it's clear that this song had a pizzazz that was yet unseen on this album. Jumping on to the next song, we have I Only Smile. In my heart you are, never very far. And if I'm at any time asked if I've known love, I would only smile. And in this alternate history, now we can boast not one, but two Denny Lane lead vocal performances. Right away, this would paint a completely different picture of the band's dynamic in this period. Perhaps if Wings, brackets McCartney, had been more open to input from the rest of the group earlier, then there would have been less of a question as to whether this was just his post-Beatle vehicle, and we wouldn't have had to sit through Wings at the Speed of Sound in the way that it was constructed. This song was also part of the Wings live repertoire during the 1972 tour, so it would make sense to appear here. It's not the best Denny Lane song ever, but it's a perfectly fun little blues ditty, and, you know, it's at least the quality of something like Time to Hide or Deliver Your Children. Finally, on this side, we're going to finish with The Mess. Very much like Soily later on, this is one of those live classic Wings tracks that are just custom built as bookends for other songs. Following on from the classical Wings, let's put on a big show mantra, The Mess once more offers us a window into that harder rock, dirty band that never was. Once more, we would have had a more credible rock presence on display on this album. It's more of a band song as well, and it could have allowed McCartney to achieve that ever unattainable dream of being in a rock band rather than being in a pop band. And this is another one of those really fun, really catchy choruses that was just swiped off the album forever. Again, it's quite unforgivable. On to side three now. So we are onto a whole new physical piece of vinyl, folks. This is the start of the double album. And to start off this new disc, the idea was to create something that takes a break from all the democracy and hard rock soundscapes and to just allow Paul, the man himself, to do exactly what he does best. Indulge himself in some silly love songs. Essentially, this side informally could be referred to as the piano side, as it demonstrates the wide variety of tracks that he can make while sat in front of those familiar black and white keys. I can even picture this whole side being done in a stripped-down live setting with Paul alone at the piano. I hope you think it's as beautiful as I do, folks. First off, we have My Love. Oh, yeah, we really are going into pure McCartney mode here, as there's just no other alternative than My Love for this kind of side. This is also the hit single from the album. The song's been a staple of Macca's setlist ever since, and it sees him at his most romantically dorky. rather than playing second fiddle to Big Barn Bed, I feel that this song works much better as an opener. It makes you take notice of the whole product a whole lot more, which befits its status as the leading single. It also makes the declarative statement to the eponymous Love all the more powerful as it's pushed right to the forefront. Despite my occasional gripes about this song, this was never not going to make it on. It's one of the defining songs of Red Rose Speedway. And whilst I've taken it off side one, I'm glad that it's got a bit more room to breathe now as the opening for the second disc. Next up, we have Single Pigeon.
Single pigeon, through the railings, did she throw you out? Sunday morning, fight about Saturday night.
The song which I will forever have a soft spot for, and to put it after My Love, may seem risky at first, but the two songs complement each other so instinctively to me. The first is a big brash declaration of love, then Single Pigeon follows it up by giving us a wholly more detailed, nuanced and introspective episode. There's nothing wrong with two Soppy McCartney numbers in a row, just so long as it's not the norm. Single Pigeon is easily the most economically brilliant song on the whole album, and I'm glad to see it. Economically, Single Pigeon has to be the best song on the entire album. And even just creating this podcast was another excuse for me to listen to it once again. Seriously, folks, go back and check out Single Pigeon. It's almost like the preamble to something like English Tea, where you just know it's McCartney being cute. And just let him do it, because he does it so well. Following on, we have Jazz Street. Another tragically unknown groover from the Red Rose Speedway sessions that just goes to show how much fun that the band could have whilst they were experimenting with all types of songs and soundscapes. It's also another nice fit. It was also nice to fit another instrumental track into this roomier double disc. However, how can you not like a proper McCartney pop boiler piano lick, backwards guitar loops, nonsensical jamming in the background, and a true sense of spontaneous creation? Wings are truly a band in this song. There's no pretense, there's no bullshit, there's no dynamics. They just groove together and it works. And to top this side off, we have not one but four mini songs. We have Hold Me Tight, Lazy Dynamite, Hands of Love, and Power Cut, or more informally known as the Red Rose Medley.
Maybe a miracle.
Now, some people will question why I even bothered to put the medley on this album when I left off other songs, but I can tell you right now, folks, that this was always going to make the cut, and When the Night never was. I too have my own biases, and I'm the one running the show here, people. Yes, this medley has its detractors, again, myself partially included, but like so many McCartney numbers, it fulfills its function well enough, and it still works as an album closer. But rather than it being the very disappointed and muddled end of an entire album, it instead sits at the end of side three, where it just does a whole lot less damage. And anyway, at the end of the day, Power Cut is just so wonderful, it redeems the sluggish Lazy Dynamite, and I just had to include it. Plus, Luca Parisi would never forgive me. Time to round things off with side four now, and I wanted to create something a little more consistent in quality, but would also showcase the many varying talents of the band. Here we have experimental proggy types, reggae, stoner rock, and a big live jam. Wings has always been a mishmash of styles, and it's very hard to find themes for any particular side or album, although maybe this is just the part of the album that most accurately reflects the scattershot marijuana haze conditions that the album was recorded in, or the fact that I'd already created three sides and these were all the songs that were left. First of all, on side four, we have Lou, the first Indian on the moon. I thought this would be the palate cleanser after the twiddly nonsense that is the medley at the end of side three, making the avant-garde, space-aged aspects of this song stand out all the clearer amidst the variety. This is another song that has warmed to me since the initial review on the podcast, and I must say, for all the original Red Rose Speedway flaws, it's certainly much more of an interestingly puzzling song than people give it credit for, and it is worth checking out once again. Next up, we have Sea Moon.
Sea Moon, Sea Moon, Sea Moon, is she? Sea Moon, Sea Moon.
And I'm sticking Sea Moon on this album purely because it took me so damn long to come across Sea Moon of my own volition. So I'm trying to rewrite history and make sure I come across this song a little quicker. This is one of the band's most delightfully laid back and silly affairs, and it quickly became a favourite of mine. However, as is the same with many B-sides, I Lie Around, The Mess, Little Woman Love, this song was forever underrepresented except for obscure compilation albums. Plus, it's another kooky contrasting tonal shift from the quasi-epic journey of Lou and his journey to the moon, to this chilled reggae outing that just sees the band having fun in a completely different setting. Following on, we have Soily, and this is another one that I've always wanted to find a new home for. Until Macca put the song on Wings Over America, it remained as a kind of bonus Easter egg for fans who went to any of the early Wings rock gigs. But now, Soily in this universe will officially become a song over 4 years earlier, and can add to the already much more substantial number of rockers that the band have accumulated at this point. Fuck you, Capitol Records, this is going to be a rocking band album. And by this point, I would like to think that's gone in some way to solidifying the band to be anything other than armchair music. Now, this was stuff that you could really move your feet and jump around to and end a rock concert with. Speaking of ending, we're going to do our final song now. I'm going to end the Red Rose Speedway double album with High, High, High. So I thought I'd play it safe here by pre-emulating the fantastic closer from Wings Over America, except I swapped it around rather than High, High, High and Soily. I've gone for Soily and High, High, High. I think High, High, High is the stronger of the two tracks. So now in my alternate dimension as well, the Wings giant triple album will now sport three tracks from Red Rose Speedway rather than just one, which would have a nice poetic symmetry if nothing else. This is another surefire hit song that would have sat very comfortably in the middle of a rockier double album, and the fact that there was even the remotest hint of a rebellious sense of cool and edge would have given the album and the band as a whole an extra dollop of credibility with younger audiences. So what are we left with? Did anything not make the grade? Well, When the Night surely didn't, and Seaside Woman was never going to make the cut, sorry Linda, as well as more obscure tracks that just didn't do anything for me, like Tragedy or Best Friend, just really, 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 really weird things. I would have liked to have squeezed Mama's Little Girl in there somewhere. Maybe even swap that with I Would Only Smile. But I do want to give Dead End Lane some exposure. And I now have put 1882 in there in place of When the Night. I can't believe I thought about it any other way. In the end, I felt like it was important not to just throw everything onto the record for the sake of it. Well, obviously because of actual the physical limitations of vinyl itself. You know, as there's only so much room. But McCartney's discography already has too much self-indulgence in it anyway, and it's always nice to have some missing tracks that will never quite make it, just to keep the mystery and the mystique alive. Overall, I'd like to think though that I've picked the cream of the crop and reorganised and recategorised this package into a more eclectic yet cohesive experience. So am I saying that my version is better than the one that Paul McCartney put out there? The Paul McCartney? Oh, yeah. Yes, I am. Look, I know as well as you do that Red Rose Speedway wasn't perfect when it came out, and yet I will always find a soft spot for its mawkish sense of whimsy and kitsch fireside banality. And I wholeheartedly mean that in the best possible way, no irony. But the truth is, whenever you listen to it, you can almost too easily spend too much time worrying about what could have been rather than enjoying the product. Yes, there are highs, but it's the lows that really made the rounds amongst the fans and kind of permeates to this day. This new album, as far as I'm concerned, has a such a grander scale and a more amplified declaration of what this band is capable of and what it's meant to be doing. And it does the job it was originally set out to do. This is an album that the people would actually want to go out and buy. It's not the quaint, dainty Red Rose Speedway that we had from before, but it's had a cornucopia of diverse and interesting songs. Many more of them have a distinct edge to them, with a greater focus on true rock and roll sensibilities. This album would have been far more likely to strike it rich, with those listeners eager to know whether the poorly received debut album Wildlife was just a one-off hiccup or not. Who knows? Maybe there is hope that in the future we'll get a 50th anniversary edition of Red Rose Speedway akin to the recent Sgt. Pepper re-release, and that it would include all the additions that I've made here today. Here today. Maybe more, but I wouldn't hold your breath, folks. Thank you so much for listening, folks. This has been part of the massive slew of bonus episode content that I've been meaning to get out to you. I know we've had a little bit of a dry spell recently. It's not the first, probably won't be the last. Many apologies. Please follow us on Twitter at McCartneyPod. Check out the Patreon in the link below. Find us on YouTube and Facebook by typing in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Podcast. Check out the blog as well. This episode actually started out as a blog post, so if you want to go and check out any future content that may be appearing as an episode, the quickest place to find it is on the blog, which is www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. That's www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. And leave us a 5-star iTunes review, you motherfuckers. Thank you very much. Please keep listening to Paul. Denny Lane's probably playing this out right now. Peace and love. I love all of you. Peace and love. Take care, folks. Bye.